Shisada Akona Kamara, and welcome to Satsang with the Shambhala Center. You are beginningless. You are endless. You are divine.
Good evening, everybody. This is Shisada Akona Kamara. You're sitting in for a satsang session again. I'm joined by PLAN and three of our core council members for the Shambhala Center for Spiritual Awareness, Linda, Megan, and Tim. So let's go ahead and get ourselves centered for a clearing. Take a nice deep breath and call yourselves forward. Mother, Father, God, that I am, through the Great Central Sun Hierarchy, through the Office of the Christ, through the Order of Melchizedek, I call upon Archangel Michael to bring the sapphire blue ray. Cut away, cut away, cut away anything in all of our four lower vehicles not emanating directly from our I Am presence. I now call on Archangel Ezekiel, Keeper of the Violet Flame. Blaze, blaze, blaze the violet flame through all of our four lower bodies. Transmute, transmute, transmute all the psychic debris Michael has cut free. I now bring forth the invincible ring pass knot and the mirror blue light of invisibility to completely surround each of us. And I call forth the shaft of pure Christ light to surround each one of us. And I ask that these shafts of light be brought to the center of the earth, where I call on Archangel Gabriel to seal them. And I ask that the legions of Michael completely surround each tube of light. And now I ask that our vibrations be raised high above the psychic and astral worlds to the highest realm of illumined truth we each can attain at this time. And now, Mother, Father, God, we place ourselves in service to you and to humanity. And PLAN and I place ourselves in service to all of those listening tonight. We ask that only that which is direct from you be permitted into our perceptions, and that all else of the lower mind be kept out. And we ask that only that which is direct from you be permitted through us. And because we have asked this, we consider it so. So be it. I'm going to ask you to hold that space for just another moment. The energies are really strong, quite chaotic. There's a lot of purging going on collectively right now. So let's take a moment, place ourselves in service. Do that inwardly now. And let's ask any kind of energy that can come through our vessels at this time for transmutation. Let's ask that that be allowed to happen if it is in the highest good of all concerned. And I will ring the bell three times. So take a nice deep breath. All right, come on back to me. That was a good one. Made me a little queasy.
To say.
It's always good when you do transmutation work, when you feel yourself get a little queasy. All right. Excellent. The energies are just really ramped up right now. If you follow astrology, you would know that as well. Because as far as what's going on planetarily, that's absolutely what we're in the middle of. We're anchoring in another level of consciousness now that is literally completely reworking the grid around the planet. So we're all feeling it. And it's a level of consciousness that has not been on this planet. You know, I don't know if it's ever or just since the fall. But it's been a really long time either way. And everything is being transformed by it. And it'll take some time. It's not an instantaneous kind of thing. So if you are experiencing issues with bodily pain, if you're experiencing literal purging from within inside your body, things wanting to come out, very normal right now. If you are experiencing just seeing more emotional and mental chaos in your world right now, very normal. I would expect it. I had an experience the other day that I was actually sharing with my guide, because in my world in general at this point, I don't experience the highs and lows that, you know, humanity experiences. So if I have a day that's off, it's unusual, and I know what that means. And the other day I had an experience, and it was literally like watching a train wreck all day long. It was one of those days where anything that could possibly go wrong absolutely went wrong, from the level of emotional, and it was all within my household because I didn't even leave the house that day. So it was like at some point or other, every person in my household was in tears. Not simultaneously, but at different points. And multiple things got dropped that day that made no sense whatsoever. You know, and just the dynamics between people were very on edge, and people were being triggered over the slightest little tiny things, you know. And generally in my home, that doesn't happen often because the energy in the house is quite stable. So it was really interesting. And so I say that because if you are experiencing that, just know that it's normal. And also, if you haven't been experiencing that, this is your heads up because it's on its way. It always is. And for some reason, kind of like, you know, I've spoken on this program before about how when you make your, as you're traveling through your spiritual path, right, you do it with one hand up, kind of always reaching up for assistance, and then one hand down there to assist others. Well, this network, you know, it functions that way in multiple respects. And one of those respects is that those who are your hand up will experience these things before you will, right? And those that are your hand down will experience them after you do, because it's like this wave of energy. So if you see yourself as a human chain reaching up toward the heavens, right, this wave of energy is coming down. So it's going to hit those above you first, and then it'll pass through you, and then it'll hit the people below you next, right? And that's exactly how it happens. And my students know that. If I tell them something's coming, that I experienced something, they know that it's just a matter of time before they do. So this is why I would even bring it up, because it is a heads up. So when you find yourself standing there going, what on earth is going on today? Hopefully you can pull this moment up and go, ah, that must be what she was talking about. It's just the energies, right? So don't personalize it. It's not you, it's not your life, it's not, you know, the universe is out to get me. It's just the energies, and everything has to be recalibrated. And we're looking at a recalibration that is resulting in a higher level of consciousness on the planet. So, of course, in order for that to anchor in, anything that is not in resonance with it has to be expelled or purged or transmuted, however you want to word it, okay? That's why you're going to see it in the world. And then there are other things going on in the world right now that are quite crazy, you know, just stuff with Ebola going on, which is a really big deal, and stuff with I was personally involved with the issue concerning the visa system with the U.S. that crashed on the 20th and set all of globally anyone trying to get a visa to this country is stuck in limbo land. I'm involved because I have a young lady coming over to live with us for a year from Germany, and she can't come. She was supposed to come tomorrow, and her visa's stuck. So, you know, there's just all this stuff going on that it's really weird. You know, how is it that such a, the U.S. State Department, its whole software system crashes, you know, and it's unusual, certainly, but it's perfect for the timing. So stay centered to the best of your ability. When you find yourself swirling because you're witnessing the train wreck, and not only are you witnessing it, you're in the middle of the train wreck, right? Just know that it's not you and it's not your fault and you haven't done anything wrong, and don't hang on to any kind of guilt or question what have I done wrong and all that stuff. Just allow it to be what it is. And if you find yourself blaming yourself, then forgive yourself and get over it and move on, right? All right. No guilt here. Okay. PLAN.
Yes.
What do we have to do since our last program?
Our last program, you left off telling the story of the Silent Sage.
And you said that's such a beautiful story. The Silent Sage. It's one of my favorites. Did I say that we would return to it?
You did.
It
you said you'd explain it more.
Explain it more.
Because okay. you just told the story. That was it.
Okay. So now I get to retell the story. Yay! You get to tell a story. Story time. Okay. All right. So for those of you who didn't catch the story, it's a very simple story, but it's a very profound story. And it was told to me by my guide early on in my work, and I never forgot it. She only had to tell it to me once, and I just never forgot it because it's really profound. So there is a sage in this small town somewhere in China. And I don't even call it a town, we'll call it a village. And he lives a life of silence, okay? The sage, his entire life, has never spoken a word to anybody. And he lives a very humble life, and he has this little hut with very meager belongings. And he just goes about his own business and meditation and, you know, doing all the things that a sage does. So one day the sage leaves his house to go into the village for provisions, maybe some bread or rice or something. And as he's gone, a thief comes into his home. And as the sage returns to his house and he opens the door, he sees this thief in his hut. And the thief turns toward him, and in his hand is this long dagger. And the sage looks at the thief, knowing that the end is coming, yeah? And what would one think? You'd think that the sage would scream out or that the sage would fight back, but he didn't. He looked at the thief, and as the thief came toward him, just as he's about to plunge the dagger into the sage's chest, the sage uttered the first sentence he had ever uttered. And what he said was, "Thou too art God." And then the thief killed him. So for the general person hearing that, they'd be like, well, he was stupid. Right? Who wouldn't fight back? Why wouldn't you do that? And there's a greater point to the story. Okay. The point is that at the moment when one recognizes themselves as God, simultaneously, you recognize everything as God. And you also see very clearly that while you see everything as God, very few aspects of God see themselves or anything else as God. So you live in a world where you see what others can't. And you see the divinity in every being. And in the moment when the thief goes to kill the sage, that is the only thing, the only piece of truth that matters, is for the sage to give to the thief the one piece of knowing that could truly impact him. It's not what are you doing, because that's part of the story. It's not you shouldn't do this, because that's part of the story. What it is truth. And he says that thou too art God. And in the statement, he's saying that I am God, and so are you. And so it doesn't matter what the knife does to this body. It doesn't matter the intent behind it that's being experienced by the personal self of the thief, which has fallen in its consciousness. What matters in this moment is that I see you as divine, and even the act of killing as divine, because there's nothing outside of God. And that's what the sage departed the world with. It's beautiful. Shows the level of illumination that the sage truly lived by. It's easy to say that, I'm balanced, right? It's easy to say I'm really in my core and I'm very centered. But can you do it when someone's about to plunge a knife into your chest, right? It's where the rubber meets the road. We have this, it's very easy for the spiritual ego to carry a false sense of illumination. Very easy. I remember once hearing James Gilliland speaking. This is probably a good 2 or 3 years ago. He was doing an interview or something, and I remember him saying this same point in his way. But he was saying, you know, it's kind of easy to sit there and say, oh, you know, this is what I believe, and this is who I am, and I'm this, and, you know, I get it, and I'm awakened and all that. But where are you going to be when the ground starts shaking under your feet, you know? And he was talking from the level of having, say, major earth changes, right? It's easy to say, oh, I can ride through that, no problem. But what really happens in the moment? And isn't that what it really comes down to? It's easy to say, oh, I'm not afraid of dying, until the experience of death is upon you. And then you see what's really at play, you know? Because if there is a fear there, it absolutely will present itself. And it's very easy for the mind to trick itself into thinking, I've got this thing licked, right? And then to function from a false sense of a false sense of knowing, right? That's why I say to everybody that I work with and anybody who happens to listen that, oh, what do I say? I lost it. Wait a second. What do I say? Oh, that's funny. Hang on. Drag it back. What do I say? You tell me. What do I say? That's hysterical. What was I going to say, PLN? You should know by now.
Actually, I don't know, because I was thinking about the fact that I used to be so fearful of flying because I was afraid the plane would fall out the sky and I'd die. And I was thinking about how calm I am on planes now.
It's beautiful, isn't it?
Yeah. It's beautiful. Really nice. So, I don't know.
I do say we're not here to change anything, that we are here to see through it. It had something to do with the false sense of the awakened state. It is tricky. Yeah. Linda says it's tricky. And it is. It's very subtle. It's very subtle. I remember I remember specifically being in meditation. This is a good one. And this is after I had, you know, major experiences. Okay. Major experiences. I had done a huge amount of dissolution, and I had, experienced myself as God. Okay. So just to show you how subtle it is, it'll always come trying to grab. That's just the way the mind is. And I remember experiencing this, this whole spiral. I was waiting for this experience to happen that to me meant, you know, you've arrived. Okay. That's what it was to me. It's a very specific experience. And I knew in my path where I was at that really was the next thing would be this very specific experience. And I'm not going to tell you what it is because it doesn't matter. But I knew that was next. And I'd just been kind of waiting for it to happen, never knowing when it would, never knowing, you know, like what has to happen first. I didn't know. But what I did know was that it hadn't happened, right? Here we come to our attachments and expectations. So I had taken some time away to go be alone where I could, you know, really focus. And the first time I had taken a trip like that was amazing. I had had just experiences because I finally had the chance to be by myself. Now, remember, I am a wife and I'm a mother of three children, and I do not have family nearby. So I'm always with my husband and children. There just isn't time to go away. So I had this opportunity and I took it, and I had just this incredible, incredible, you know, week. So I went back again, right? Well, of course, it'll be a repeat. There's our expectation, right? So I get out there and like nothing's happening. It's not a repeat of what it was last time. It feels like I'm kind of stuck, you know. And I will never forget sitting in front of two pictures, one being a photograph of my guide and the other being a picture of Sanat Kumara and Lady Venus. And I always have them close by me, those who know me. And it was late at night and I'm in the dark other than having some candles lit where I was staying, and I'm looking at these pictures and I just said, you know, what do you want from me? Like, what do you want me to do? And I just sobbed, right? This whole story came up of I'm trying so hard, you know, and what do you want me to do? Just tell me and I'll do it, right? Tell me and I'll do it. And as I'm crying, just weeping like a puddle on the floor, right? Because all I know is that I'm here in service, right? I've given you everything. I have nothing. I have no money. I have like nothing, right? What do you want from me? And in that experience, a little voice popped in and was like, well, there's the spiral. Like, there it is. You know, you're not in service. You're identified. You think that's service? That's not service. That's the personal self. And it was like, oh my God, you know. And we were just talking before when we had our session here in Charlotte, I was talking about how you can identify with anything. The mind will identify with anything. So even a story that says, I came here to be of service to humanity, while it is true on a very deep level, okay, it is absolutely truth with a capital T, but at the same time, it can become something that gets identified with by mind, and it just turns into another polarized story. Because then I turned into the victim, right, who is failing in the mission, who hasn't attained whatever it is that's meant to be attained, which means it must be she hasn't done whatever it was she was supposed to do, and this whole thing ran, right? And it was really ridiculous. But it took that experience to then move to the next experience, which was really profound. So sometimes it's, and you have to keep this in mind, it is these negative looking experiences that are so difficult to move through, and they're so emotional to move through at the time. It's those experiences that then lead us to the place where now we can step into the next level. And that next level, for me, was just
to catapult beyond that whole thing. Just the whole thing. To see all of it, you know, as I was talking about earlier tonight. Talking about witnessing the Christ. Well, actually, PLN started that. Seeing that the Christ was there the whole time. There it was. Oh, my gosh. Like, there it was. Oh, my gosh. And in the experience of it, it was this, truly, when they call it awakening, they aren't kidding, because you have moments of true awakening because you see it so clearly. And that particular experience for me was, I don't even think the word profound is strong enough, because I saw it so clearly. I could just moment after moment after moment. They say your life flashes in front of your eyes. That was what I had, except what I saw was Christ, 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 Christ. I could see it, you know. It was there when she did that, and it was there when she was doing that, and it was there when she thought she did that. She being me, yeah. And here this whole time, what was the struggle? The struggle was that we have to kind of like annihilate that thing, right? That person that she was. And what I saw was, but Christ was there the whole time. And just because you didn't recognize it didn't mean it wasn't there, right? It just got covered up. It's just covered up. But it was there the whole time. And that was one of the most amazing experiences of my life, because the level of recognition was so powerful. It was so powerful that I just sat and wept and laughed at the same time. Because it's like, you know, when they say God is closer to you than your own breath, there's no truer statement, because in the moment you actually see it. Oh my gosh, like this whole time I thought I was this, and I was right here. God, right here, right here. You know? And then it's just been God with amnesia, but it's still God, right? And that's profound, and it's an amazing experience, and everybody will have it at some point. Everybody will. To one degree or another, I can't say how everyone's will come about, but I do know my own, and it changed the way I saw everything. And I had already done extremely deep work. Like I said, you know, I had experienced myself as God, meaning just light. I'd had that. Okay, and now people can call that whatever they want to call it. Self-realization, like whatever, okay? Had that, knew that, felt it to my core, right? Would never forget it. And then still, even after that experience, what happened, right? Mine grabbed a story and ran with it under the guise of wanting to be of service. Yeah. Seems so benevolent, doesn't it? It's always, she's laughing at Apelian. It's always the benevolent reason. It isn't, I mean, you can't get much more benevolent than that. I'm here in service to humanity. Right? Savior. Right? And then the Savior fails. Right? And then being victimized by myself. The failure. It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. Now, what is seen is that that is exactly what had to transpire to move to the next step, right? Because how do you see it if you don't experience it, right? It lays hidden. And so it's the same for everybody. All these stories and all these things that have been identified with are hidden from you. That's why you repeat the same things over and over and over again, right? That's why the feeling of being victimized comes over and over and over again, because it's hidden from you. Well, it doesn't just jump out all on its own, right? Sometimes the story of the doer who's trying so hard has to come in order for it all to fall apart. And then that brings it right up into your face. You can't not see it then. Well, I guess you could. For anyone doing really deep work, you can't not see it at that point. It's too obvious. So find the beauty in the challenge, right? because it is. Every single little challenge is such a gem, right? It's, and that's the thing with this reality. You know, it's your prison. Yeah. Yes, because consciousness is literally enslaved here. It's not meant to make you feel good or bad. It's the truth. It's your prison. But within the prison walls is the key to open the gate to walk out of the prison. So at that point, is it really a prison at all? Really? If the key's in your hand, are you really a prisoner? Really? No. So what's everyone so upset over? The stories that run, poor me, and oh, I'm trying so hard. And I remember once I said to Atona, I was talking to her. We used to talk for very long periods on the phone. So I had walked my way outside, and I was just pacing around in the driveway talking to her. And something came in our conversation to the point of, it feels like I'm going to die. And I'm looking at Tim because he just went through this. It feels like I'm going to die. And she said, oh, it's just mind. And I said, yeah. But it really feels like I'm going to die. You know, and she's like, okay, so then what? And I was like, I don't know. And she said, just surrender to it. Just let go. And I'm like, but what do you mean? What do you mean, let go? And she's kind of chuckling, you know, just let go. And that literally it could be as simple as that in that moment, right? In the moment, if it's allowed to just be what it is, death of the personal self, feels like actual physical death, like that's what's coming. That's exactly what it feels like. And in that moment, it could be just as simple as just let go. Because in the moment, that's exactly what's going on. There's something still grabbing to what? To its concept of life. The fear is death, so it's grabbing for life. You see the polarization that's right there? And what she's saying is, let go of all of it. It's not necessary, you know. There is no death, and there is no life, because they're both just concepts. There is no death. Anyone who has gone deep enough into meditation will absolutely tell you that. And I know for everyone sitting in the room with me right now, they've gone in deep enough that they should recognize that already. Because what you witness is that when you come back from meditation, you feel like you just came back from someplace. Yeah. You'd be like, wow, I was just completely gone. I didn't hear the music, you know, had lost sense of my body. And okay, so like, where did you go? And what happened to the you that was sitting in the chair? Right? Did something happen there? Did it disappear? Did it, you know? And all you know is that you were present with you the whole time. Because you can't ever escape you, right? You are that. You are the I am. The I am doesn't stop being. It is the I am. So the I am is with the I am all the time. Whether the physical body is moving around or whether it appears as though the physical person has died. Your experience won't be that. Why would it be? What would it be to die? It would be a movement into nothingness where there isn't even awareness at all. No awareness. And how could that even be possible? You are awareness itself. And as that, how could you ever experience the lack of it? So there's no death. There's no death. It's a concept that we have held on to so strongly here in this collective that we've made it real. We've made all of it real, and it's not, right? And I've told all of you the story when my father was dying of cancer, and I went to the hospital. He had had a major surgery, and I went to the hospital to spend some time there helping out. And I watched. At the time, I didn't know that he was starting the death process, okay? I didn't know. And I sat there with my dad for several days watching him, and I watched his consciousness move in and out and in and out. And what I witnessed was that when dad wasn't there, right? And you all know what it's like to be around someone who, for some reason, maybe it's because they're drunk or maybe they're in a state of rage even, or maybe you've seen someone move through the death process, they're not there. Yeah. Or someone sleepwalking. They seem to be moving in the world, or they could even talk to you, but when you look at them, they're not there. No one's home, right? We know that. We know what that looks like. So that's what I was sitting with my dad, and I was watching when dad, the essence of dad, right? When he was present with me and when he wasn't there. And what I saw was that when he wasn't there, the body consciousness carried on just fine all by itself. It played out its program, right? So the program for my father was that, you know, for 35 years, maybe a little more, you know, he was an accountant. That's what he did. And he was also quite the builder and electrician and carpenter. And like, that's the other stuff he did. Like, he built their house, right? He could do all that stuff. So he's laying there in this bed. Dad's not there. But the body is still talking, right? The body is still doing what it's doing. And it's asking for a piece of paper. I need a piece of paper. Okay, we'll get you a piece of paper. So we get it to him. And he starts writing. And he's writing out like a general ledger, right? Putting days, he's got it all. He's got it, putting out the numbers. And he's spouting out all this stuff about, yeah, we have to remember to do this. And, you know, just this whole thing. The program of the accountant is running. Very present. Running. Okay. And then he stops and then he's looking and he looks at the wall and he looks at the floor and he said, I don't know about this flooring. It, you know, it didn't come out right. We have to, you know, it's the wrong kind of wood. We need to relay the floor. And he's talking about the wiring in the room, you know, and how the wiring needs to be redone and we need to do it this way and blah, blah, blah. So the program of the builder, the electrician and all that stuff is running and you're very present. And you can see it. And it was an amazing, amazing experience for me. First, you have to be in a space where you can hold that space, right? Because from a personal place, I wouldn't have been able to do it. Here's my dad. I adored my father, right? From a personal place, I'd be sitting there in horrible pain, watching him in pain, you know. But the observer, you know, at that course in my work was extremely strong. So I was able to completely detach the personal and just be present with him. That was the whole point. Just be present with him. Give him every bit of love I've got. Now, if I'm sitting there in pain with him, I'm not giving him love. I'm giving him pain. Understand? Now, in this world, we think that's love. If I sit and cry by your bed, I'm showing you how much I love you. No, you're not doing a darn thing to help that person. Detach from the story and get in your core and love the person, right? I wasn't loving him through the stuff. I was loving him, the essence, and able to watch as that essence pulled away and came back and pulled away and came back. And he'd come back and he'd look at me and I would see recognition. And I would look at him and I'd be like, hi, Dad, you know? And he's like, what? Like, why are you looking at me like that? Because I was just exuding love for him. And I would just look at him and I'd say, I love you. You know, and then he started to ask. It was very interesting because my father went to, I was raised Methodist, and, you know, he went to church. And he wasn't a terribly religious person, but he definitely you know, believed in God, and he did. I watched him in the hospital, you know, asking for forgiveness. You know, like, so this was deeply ingrained in him. And to watch him move through that was really interesting, because he knew I was doing spiritual work, but I never really talked to him a lot about it. Now, my mother is a very different person, so she's very up on what I'm doing. But my dad, you know, he knew, but he didn't want to know. You know what I mean? But he started asking me these very esoteric kind of questions in his hospital bed, right? And so I'm answering him, you know, and I'm telling him there's no separation. There's no separation. You never left God. You're God, you know? And he's looking at me, and he's like, and he literally said this, and it cracked me up. It still makes me laugh, because it so wasn't my dad to say this. But he looks at me, and he goes, Carrie, he goes, you're blowing my mind. It was so funny. He's like, you're blowing my mind. And I was like, good. Because I was showing him truth, right? And the only way that I was capable of doing that was because there was no personal self running. His daughter, the story of his daughter, was not present in that hospital room. Right? It was God connecting with God, and that was it. That was all it needed to be. And that was the greatest level of service I could have ever given him. Yeah. To sit by his bed, even when the body was sleeping, and recite things over to him. You've never been separated. There is no separation. To keep saying it over and over and over, so that a level of his consciousness was hearing that over and over and over, makes an impact. Yeah. It's not any different than why I sit here on the radio and spout the same things out over and over and over, because it makes an impact. Even if you can't recognize it, it is doing its work. So when he passed, I felt such a sense of peace. I knew I had given him everything I could have. I knew I had given him the absolute best of me, and that I served him to the fullest of my capacity. I knew that. Yeah. And what an amazingly beautiful way to watch someone transition, right, from one level of their reality into a new level of reality. And I experienced my father so much fuller today than I ever have. And again, it's the concept that we've held about death, right? That in from a personal perspective, I could sit here and say, I miss my father. But it's actually not true, because I experience the totality of him now in a way I couldn't have during his physical life. Because during his physical life, he was veiled. You see? And so what could he give me? All he could give me was patterned consciousness. I wasn't getting the real him. Yeah. In bits and pieces now and again, but it wasn't very often. For as much as I know he loved me, his capacity to show it was not strong, right? That's not to say it's his fault. That's not to say anything other than that's how it was programmed. Okay? That's how it was programmed. He's not to be blamed for that. It was just programmed that way. Okay? So like everybody else walking around on the planet, it was just patterned consciousness doing what it was programmed to do. Okay. Now, if I go in and connect with my father, I feel him and I can see him using my inner sight, and it is the most amazing thing. And I have had amazing experiences with him since his physical passing that have just been absolutely, utterly joyful in a way I never could have experienced him in the physical world. And when you have these experiences, you know there is no death. It's just not possible. And at his funeral, when we had the service at the church, I got up to speak. And I asked everybody in the church to close their eyes. And I said, I want you to pull up a memory of my father or something that just brings you joy when you think of him, something that fills your heart when you think of my dad. And I gave him all a minute to do that. And I could, you can tell, because people start kind of smiling. You can see it, you know. They're in that space, that beautiful space, you know. And I said to them, as they're sitting there with their eyes closed, smiling, because they're thinking about him and what he meant to them, means to them. And I said, right now, you are present with my father, because that's where he lives. He lives in your heart. And you know that you're with him because you will feel his signature when you tap into him. And that's what you've all just done. And that is where he lives. He lives in your heart. He didn't live outside of your heart ever. That is where he lives, regardless of what it looks like here in the world with his bodies walking around, right? And patterned consciousness running. You aren't experiencing them. You experience them in truth in your heart. And everyone exists in your heart. From the truest level possible. And so for anybody tonight still struggling with the loss of a loved one, this program was for you. I had no idea this was coming tonight. So it must be someone out there needs to hear it. It's just a story that you have experienced a loss, because in truth, you never have. The most beautiful moments of connection you have ever had with someone in physical form didn't really happen in physical form. It was taking place in your heart anyway. Can you see that? It can look like there are things going on physically, but the connection was in the heart. What's the difference between sex and making love? That. Two bodies can come together. Sure, that's a primal thing. Primal urge, two bodies coming together, procreation, you know, survival of the species. But that's not real. That's fallen. Survival of the species. That makes the presumption that death is real. It's not. There's nothing, quote unquote, real about that. However, you come together with another person and the bodies can come together and the energies combine into one and the hearts connect as one. And that experience is real and profoundly beautiful. It'll bring you to tears because that connection is the heart. And it's as real as it gets. And when if you've had that experience, you recognize that in the moment, you didn't know where you started or stopped and the other person began. Because it was all just one beautiful joining. That's real. The heart is real. If you ever want to be with anyone, whether they're still in physical form or not, it doesn't matter because they could still be in physical form. It doesn't matter. If you really want to be with them, don't worry about when am I going to see them again. Just tune into your heart. Find them there because that's where they live. See? So you're sitting next to a person right now, right? And you two could be a billion miles apart. But you could be sitting next to each other because there's no connection. Or you can be sitting and tuning into someone who's 2,000 miles away, but you're connected from your heart. And they could be on the other 2,000 miles away side connecting with you from their heart and you'll feel them. Oh boy, will you ever. Because that's real. Yeah, that's real. 1 minute. I get a countdown. She's like my teacher. She has to remind me. Get back on task. Time to go. Okay. I don't know why that all came. But it is a beautiful experience. So maybe do that. Maybe spend some time over the course of the next few days looking at, like, what is death? It's a concept. It's a concept that we have all allowed ourselves to take as truth and believe to be real. And now we expect it. You expect that body to grow old and die, you know, of disease or something else. You expect it. when science has proven that there's really no reason for the body to die in like an 80-year period because it regenerates itself all the time. There's no reason for it. And the only reason it's happening is because the mind is programmed to believe that it's supposed to. That's something worth contemplating, I think. Yeah. What if science is right? What if you could live to be 300 years old without blinking an eye? Right? If the body can do that with no problem, no problem. So what does it say about us who actually believe, oh my God, I'm 44, I'm middle-aged now. It's all downhill from here. Right? And what if the collective, we'll leave on this note, what if the collective woke up one morning and everybody changed that belief? What if overnight everyone truly from their core believed that life would be, say, 1,000? That in that moment, that's all it would take. You know that. In the moment, that's all it would take. And it would be truth. And we would all be living it. Okay. So, until next week, it was such a pleasure as always to be with you. And we love you very, very deeply. Check us out on theshambhalacenter.org and on Facebook at facebook.com/theshambhalacenter. Much love to you all, and we'll see you next week. Good night.
You are divine.